All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And yeah, we're continuing to focus on the precious metals, now taking a little step back away from the equities, more on simply the metals prices, as we're chatting with Jeff Christian. Jeff is the managing partner at the CPM Group. We chat with Jeff every month, more on the metals prices and what he sees as driving these prices. Jeff, you know we have to start with silver now that it's over $60. And boy, oh boy, silver just seems to be in kind of takeoff mode right now. But you know we keep hearing all these different reasons about why silver is moving higher. Is this a short squeeze? Is there a silver metal shortage out there? China, are they? Is the retail audience in China buying? Maybe central banks are starting to buy silver. And also, silver is now a critical mineral in the U.S. All these reasons, Jeff, filter through this. In your data, what are you seeing? What is driving silver in this explosive move?
You know, I should have scribbled down that list of things that you were saying. At the end of the day, it's investment demand. There are tight markets in London and in India. Physical demand is relatively low in India. And that's been a case for several months, and it's gotten a little bit more critical. There was a drawdown of unallocated silver in London over the last several months as a result of that. And as a result of that, and the fact that you had relatively strong demand for silver ETFs from really investors who were more momentum traders and relatively new to the market. And they were sucking up a lot of the silver in London at the same time silver was moving off to New York, to India. But, you know, it's interesting. You've seen these arbitrage opportunities where you actually had some silver going back to London from New York, silver that had been, you know, shipped over here when the arbitrage was positive to buy in London and sell in New York. It's kind of been flopping around lately. And it's hard to say, you know, let's start with what's happened. Silver prices, 12 trading days ago, you know, on Friday, the 21st of November, the Friday before Thanksgiving week, silver was $49. Actually, it was a little under $49 an ounce. This is like $48.90. And then 12 trading, in five trading days, it went from 49 to 58. You know, it went from 48 to 58, $10 in five trading days, and paused around 58 to 60 for several days. And then in the last couple of days, it's moved above 60 to $62 yesterday and today. So silver's risen 27% in 12 trading days, 2 weeks, right? two and a half trading weeks, and silver has gone up 27%. That's not a sign of fabrication demand, you know. And where does that kind of money come in? It comes in from investors. But the strange thing is when you start looking at it, you could see that there was some increase in ETF purchases last week. And it's not been a lot. You know, the SLV was 541 million ounces on the 21st. And you saw buying going into, you know, the following week, the following Friday, it was 553. So it's up 13 million ounces. Last Thursday, it peaked up around 570, 571. So it was up about 30 million ounces from November 21st. And it's actually come off about 4 million ounces over the last 3 days. That's a strange one, because then you start saying, okay, well, if the ETFs, you haven't seen tremendous shortages on the COMEX. You had a lot of deliveries on the first trading day, first two trading days, but the tradings have not, the deliveries have not been unusually large. They're about 50 million ounces so far this month for the active COMEX December silver contract. That's not unusually large. And most of it was in the first two trading days, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving and the abbreviated trading day on Friday after Thanksgiving. It's been relatively low ever since. So it's not deliveries pushing it up. It's not A shift of metal out of COMEX registered depositories, reported inventories, registered inventories, eligible inventories, they haven't shifted dramatically over the last 12 trading days. And the silver ETFs, they're up 26, 30, they were up 30 million ounces, but they've come off a little bit. That is like the one thing that you're seeing. So it's not like a short squeeze. It's hard to say what exactly has been causing the price to rise. Momentum trading, volumes have not been particularly large on the COMEX, but we do see a lot of momentum traders, people who are not necessarily traditional silver investors, people who are not interested in physical silver coming into the market, futures, options, forwards, ETFs. And the concern is that they can come out because, any commodity that can rise $15, $13 in 12 days can fall $15 in 12 days too. And it's the silver price is looking very spiky. Now, that said, our view at CPM Group is that, yeah, you could see some profit taken. Maybe the price comes off to 54, maybe the price comes off to 52 or 50. But it's probably not going back to where it was because, on a longer term basis, and by longer term, I mean 3 or 4 weeks, I mean into the first quarter of next year, from a longer term basis, the silver price has been being pushed up by investment demand. And investors are looking at the world. They're looking at the economy. They're looking at the state of their economy, their own personal financial position, top-heavy stock market, tremendous questions about employment and economic activity and inflation that have not been being answered for the last 2 months, at least for the United States. And they're looking at a very dysfunctional political system, not only in the United States, but also globally, and a dissolution of the post-war European North Atlantic Treaty Organization. You had Chancellor Merz of Germany saying that the Ukraine and Europe should not count on the United States as being an ally against Russia. And you had the president of Finland say publicly that the Europeans should make sure that Zelensky's never alone in a room with Witkoff or Kushner. It's dangerous, he said. And then you have the US government. The White House in the last week of November issued its national security strategy report, which basically said, we claim South America for ourselves. They even used the term the Trump version of the Monroe Doctrine. And South American governments, they're either with us or they're against us. And if they're against us, we have every right to overthrow the government there. And then they also were very much pro-Russia, saying that they wanted to restore Russia's historical role in Europe. So you've got a very unsettled political environment. You've got a very uncertain economic environment. And, when we look forward to the first quarter of 2026, we see a boatload of data coming out on the US economy, which could be very negative and could indicate extreme increasing weakness economically throughout the second half of last year, of this year. So we think that the first quarter could be a very hostile period economically and politically. And we see investors saying the same thing, saying we don't necessarily want to sell our gold and silver, even though they're at historically high levels, because we think that those economic and political factors are going to continue to be hostile, at least into the first quarter of next year, if not the first half. So I see that continuing. So we could see some profit taking from the $13, $14 upward move that we've seen over the last 2.5 weeks in silver, but it's going to be short-lived because there's a lot of demand from more traditional investors who want physical silver and physical gold. Any decline is going to be taken as a buying opportunity.
Well, Jeff, you've laid out a good case there for both the economic and the geopolitical strings that could continue into the first quarter of next year. Before we dive into the first quarter of next year, though, with our minds, let's just quickly look back, since this may be one of the last times we'd catch you in 2025. If we look at how the month of November ended, it was an all-time closing high in gold and silver, and copper for that matter, on a monthly basis. The last 2 weeks in silver, as you outlined, have been all-time closing high on a weekly basis. But if we look at the fourth quarter, what really strikes me, Jeff, is that the average price for gold that the producers were selling it for in Q3 was $39. Surely we're above 50 here in Q4. And unless something dramatic happens in the last couple of weeks, I can't see it not being a record quarter for Q4. But then if we even widen the scope more, we love to talk to you about the annual averages. This has got to be the highest annual average for silver and gold here in 2025. What does that mean on those longer duration charts to you when you analyze it?
Yeah, well, partly it confirms that something that we've been saying for a quarter of a century, you know, that there's been this upward shift in the investment demand for gold and for silver. And that's persisting. You know, the average price for 2025, obviously, it's not completed yet, but it's probably going to be about $40. I think if you bear with me for a second, I'll grab the price through November. The price through November was $38.26. You know, a lot of people say, well, you know, the price is $62. The average has to be something. The average, because silver started the year around $29 an ounce, the average is about $38. It's probably going to be between $39.50 and $40 for the year. And that's a record. The previous record average price was like 2011 or 2012, and it was around $34, $35 an ounce as an annual average. Our expectation is that next year's average silver price could be more than 50% higher than it is this year. So you're talking about an average price next year of around $62. An ounce. That's what we were projecting last month, you know, before, when the price was down around $48. So we think that, yeah, you're in a record price, and we think it's going higher. And we don't think that, even though the price has breached that $50 threshold that people always talked about, we don't necessarily see it going back below $50 much next year, because we see an economic and hostile environment. Now, do we see it going to $10,000 like somebody predicted overnight? No. Do we see it going over to 150? No. Do we see it going to 70 or 75? Yes, because if you're looking at an annual average price of $62 for next year that we're projecting, that suggests a wide range of prices, and prices already are at 62, so they could spike much higher on an intraday basis and then come back off. So that's sort of where we're looking in terms of silver.
Let's talk about gold then too, because gold has lagged silver. Gold's not back to all-time highs. It's very close, and quite frankly, it's consolidating. It's still a very high level above $4,100, even above $4,200. But look at the gold-silver ratio. The gold-silver ratio back in April went to 107. It's the whole way down in the high 60s right now. We haven't seen this level of the gold-silver ratio back to since 2021. So, Jeff, why is gold lagging right now?
Well, gold's lagging because silver's catching up. You know, let's be honest. You know, the gold price average through this year, I mean, it started the year at $2,650, and it got up as high as, yeah, $4,350, $4,360, something like that, almost to $4,400. The average year to date is $3,387 through November, right? So silver's sort of playing catch up. And one of the reasons why silver has outperformed, if you will, or outpaced the increase in gold over the last 2 months or 3 months. It's really good. The current spike higher in both prices started in the last week of August after the Kansas City Fed's symposium in Wyoming But part of the reason why silver spiked so much higher is because it had lagged earlier. And part of it is because the silver market is so much smaller than the gold market. It's like in terms of investment, the value of investment demand, it's maybe 10% or less in gold. And also the silver market is tighter than the gold market. There are billions of ounces of both metals lying around, but the people who own that metal, in the case of silver, about half of that is owned by investors, large and small. They don't want to sell. They've been sitting on this thing, waiting for the price to get to $50 or higher for years, if not decades. So they're waiting to see how high it goes before they sell. And in the gold market, you've got, most of the gold that's above ground refined metal is held by investors, and they're holding on to that gold. But there is more seepage or profit taking, if you will. And then central banks. And you've had central banks buying less gold this year because the price is higher. And you've had a couple central banks selling more gold this year because the price is higher. So there is a greater access to available inventories in gold, partly because it's a larger market than silver. And in silver, what you're seeing in silver this year is what you saw in 1979 and in 2004, 2005. And that is that you in the late 70s, and again from 1990 until about 2005, you had net investors selling silver. So investors who had bought silver earlier were selling either to take profits or they were disenchanted. And there came a time in 1979, and again 2004, 2005, where those investors who were selling said, "You know what? I think the silver market's turning, and if I wait until tomorrow, I might get a higher price than if I sell today." And tomorrow came and the price was higher, and they said, "I think if I wait till tomorrow to sell, I'll get a higher price." And so in both 79 and 2004, 2005, you saw the first thing was a reduction of net investor selling, and then that was replaced by net investor buying. You're seeing to some extent the same thing over the last 2 or 3 years. Investors were not sellers of silver in 2022, 2023, but they were buying a lot less silver. And they stepped up sharply last year, and they stepped up even more sharply this year. But one of the reasons why net investment demand has risen in 2024 and much more forcefully in 2025 is that while gross investment buying has been strong, gross investor selling has diminished sharply after August. If you go back to the second and third quarters, when we were talking, one of the issues was why aren't refiners buying traditional scrap, old jewelry, old electronic scrap? And the answer was there was so much investor product that was refined silver bullion, medallions, 1 ounce bars, 10 ounce bars, 100 ounce bars, that was being sold by investors that the refiners were backed up. And they were saying, "I don't, I need to melt this stuff down." Some of it needed to be refined to get to good delivery standards, but it needed to be melted down and cast in 1,000 ounce bars so the refiners could sell it. And they said, in this environment, it's much more attractive economically, financially, for a refiner to remelt and recast investor products than it is to refine scrap jewelry and electronics. They said, "We're not buying that stuff." So as recently as July and August, you saw pretty heavy investor selling of silver products, and that's gone away now, pretty much. You did see some investor selling of investment products over the last 12 trading days because the prices spiked sharply higher. And you'll probably see another wave of it as soon as the price stops rising. But it's going to be a short-lived thing, and it's going to be much smaller than what you saw from 2022 into the middle part of 2025.
Well, Jeff, if we focus in on gold for next year and we focus on some of the catalysts, obviously the catalyst you laid out with geopolitical and economic and financial reasons for Q1 are still there for gold, just the same as silver. But the central banks, a mixed bag, as you highlighted, some buying, some selling based on the higher price, but maybe less buying than usual. But there is a new factor, and that is these crypto stable coins, in particular Tether Gold, buying quite a bit of gold. That's made some headlines, and people say, hey, there's a new whale investor in the room. What do you make of that narrative that, I mean, it's happening. They are buying a lot of gold, but do you think that could pick up the pace next year where more crypto money could rotate into gold itself?
Well, I think there are a couple things going on. There's crypto money that probably would rotate into gold. And then there are crypto entrepreneurs who are creating crypto products, like gold stablecoins and stuff like that. And that has been encouraged by the Trump administration, which passed this legislation. Well, they encouraged it, and the Congress passed legislation aimed at creating a stablecoin for the US dollar. It probably won't roll out. If it rolls out, it's not expected to roll out until 2026. But if you look at the legislation, it's got holes big enough to drive, tractor trailers through. And it's very scary because if you own money, if you have your savings in dollars and they're in a bank, they're FDIC insured. If you have your money in treasuries, there's protection. If you have your money, if you transfer that money into the dollar stablecoins that the US, that the Trump administration has proposed creating, it's not FDIC insured. And the issuers of those stablecoins can depeg the stablecoins from the underlying dollars at will and without notice. So there's a lot of scope for cryptos and stable coins to have scandals hit them, like the CMOs in 2006, 2008, like the internet stocks in 2000, 2001. There's the potential for some real scandals there as people start saying, wait a second, your audits are being done by a company you own? That's not an independent audit. And you've reported X ounces of sales, of purchases of gold. Where's the independent audit that verifies that? So there's a scope for a tremendous amount of scandals in the crypto and stablecoin realms that could be very positive for gold and silver, because those investors who invest in those vehicles would say, oh my God, there's a rubric that people say over and over again in the precious metals market, if you don't own it, if you don't hold it, you don't own it. And that's not necessarily true. It's a gruesome oversimplification, the kind that people who invest based on religious beliefs instead of facts rely on. But there is a kernel of truth there. And if you're buying a derivative and a derivative of a derivative that's underregulated and poorly structured and not independently audited, you have tremendous scope for scandal. And I think that will ultimately, over the next 2 years and perhaps beyond, be very positive for demand for investor demand for physical gold and silver.
Jeff, in a big picture sense, have we seen a narrative shift more positively towards not just precious metals, but mining in general? We've had a few news stories this year of people adjusting that 60-40 portfolio to a 60-20-20. We also have seen a lot of people doubt government bonds. Even though the bond market has not crashed, there has been a lot more fear come into bonds broadly. And government simply more supportive of mining. As we said, critical mineral, silver now, plus all the other investments that even the US government has made, and even the Canadian government, pretty much all governments are talking a lot more about mining. Is there a narrative shift that happened this year over the last couple of years? And if so, is that going to stick around?
There has been a narrative shift, and some portion of it will fade away because it's hype, and some portion of it will stay and stick. The reality is that Somebody said it very well, vis-a-vis electricity. The reality is that the world needs raw materials for economic growth. And we've had an extended period of time where we could coast, but that period of time seems to be coming to an end. And the scope for needing to invest in things that, mining companies, invest in actual output, that's going to come along. There's going to be a shock when people realize that it takes 20, 25 years to get a gold, any mine into production if you did it, and that you're really only talking about, 0.1 to 1% of the projects that you hear about ever coming into production. So there's going to be some issues around that. But the reality is that the world needs stuff. I was at a conference this year about electricity, and someone who people see as a liberal, pro-clean energy type of person said, the world doesn't need less energy. The world needs more energy. And you're not going to solve the dirty energy problem by cutting back on total energy. Because if you do that, which is what the U.S. government's doing now, you're putting yourself on the back heels, and you're going to be relying more on dirty energy than clean energy. And the same is true with all of these other minings. Now, there is scope for increased steel production from scrap, increased copper production from scrap. The lead scrap refining industry is very large, but it needs a radical cleanup, literally, physically, as well as financially. But you're going to need production, and you're going to need production from reserves that are well known around the world. So I think that the mining industry probably has turned its corner in terms of equity interest. It still suffers from a number of people who look at the vast majority of smaller and larger mining companies and say, this management, CPM Group focuses first on management, second on resources. And a lot of other investors have shied away from the mining industry because they haven't felt that the management was capable or in the right frame of mind to move those companies forward on a profitable basis. And that'll still be a headwind, but it'll probably be less of a headwind going forward than it has been over the last, say, 10, 15 years.
All right, Jeff, thanks for fielding all these questions, really wrapping up this year, which has been a banner year for precious metals. But don't forget about copper's making a run higher. Uranium stocks broadly have done pretty well. There's a number of positive aspects in the resource sector right now. But precious metals, when you have a gold bull market, boy, oh boy, it can sure bring in a lot more investors a lot quicker. And this bull market in gold, ever since a breakout, now, almost 2 years ago, it's been impressive and very fun to ride along with. Also very interesting to hear what you're seeing within the data that you pull at the CPM Group. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Hope you all have a great rest of your weekend. And please be sure to go back to our website, kereport.com, podcast, YouTube channel, and Substack account. Just search The KE Report. It's where you can find all our daily editorials and company updates. Jeff, again, thank you. Everyone, thanks for tuning in. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.